wired and what we're experiencing, because otherwise it's just jargon. Like, otherwise it's just jargon.
That's
and
why we're asking the books to come out.
And complicated.
You know, the new astrology books just have new pictures, bigger words. Taurus, Gemini, bigger pictures, and they're so confusing. There's a billion references to that sign with all their little symbols and stuff. And then, kind of lost.
Let's talk about how we live. Yeah, it's coming in alive.
To present day energetic happenings.
Right. Right. Good. Okay. So let's do Anne's chart next. Let's do it. Candace just handed out the printout. And so with the four step, she is the person in the room who has Pluto in Cancer. So when we talked about that, you know, yesterday afternoon, kind of. We'll start with some of the context of the journey with Pluto and Cancer. It's in the 10th house, and it does have aspects that we'll talk about. But so the first step of Pluto, the soul intends to become empowered through living in the 10th house, which is a house of public self. It's often thought of to be about career, but it's really about who you want to be in the world, whether or not your job actually reflects it or not, jobs or career. It can be a place in the community instead of an actual career, but it's your public face. That's the big thing. And through the lens of Cancer, to develop a role that allows you to show your heart or your inclination to serve or heal or help or shepherd people, something. But Pluto, Cancer in the 10th. And so we talk about the basic soul intention with Pluto in Cancer, to become empowered through dealing with emotions. Become empowered through feeling. And learning about all of the ups and downs and the nooks and crannies of a human's emotional makeup. So this is what can empower or disempower Anne. One of the things that can do that. And yet this is in a public context. In different lives, she will have the experience of having her emotions revealed publicly, intentionally or unintentionally, that affect her reputation in her community or her job. So this is a public display of emotion, whether she means it or not. And so in some lives, something happens and your heart is visible and everyone can see you. Doesn't mean they judge or don't judge. We don't know. But you're seen as an emotional person in public. Yeah, yeah. So you'll tell us soon. So, but that's kind of the fundamental basic soul's journey is trying to do that. The layers, the strata of stuff to dig through with the emotional archaeology is why. Why that would happen. Well, the soul's intention is to bring heart into the community. That's the intention. To develop, I'm going to give you a couple other angles on this. To develop a public way of being that includes emotion. Right? What have you done for a living? What's your thing?
I'm an artist.
You're an artist. Yeah. Painter or sculptor, textiles. Like what is it that you do?
Yeah. Drawing, painting, sculpture.
Drawing, painting.
Mm-hmm. Glass,
so people, all okay. So people seeing the result of your emotional process. Right. And some of them will see the product and not see the process, and that's fine too. But like, it's available. It's available.
That's revealing. True art. You can't hide your art.
Right.
Well, art piece is right in front of everyone.
It's all there. My soul story is all there.
I was going to say, may I ask if it feels intense to you? Does it feel intense to you, your art? Like it's an intense expression? Or
it did at the time I made it. Mm-hmm. And it was years before I was able to look at it from a different place and see that I was indeed telling my soul story. Mm-hmm. And it was also, I realize now how healing it was.
Can I ask if there, if there are certain themes that are across all of the media, like are there certain themes that Like hearts? I mean, that would be too obvious. I just want to share, if she's open to sharing it, I'm at her house
and I'm looking at all her wonderful different art on the wall, and then all of a sudden there's these sculptures with all different types of things that are there, and they all have a message. And they're very beautiful. And they're made with things from the earth, textiles and rocks and all pieces of this and that. And there's one that she brings out and she shares an important story about her history. But I can't share that with you. And about the filing down. That's how intense and how much of structure is into that art and history.
See, so you're living other lives along the Earth timeline, and other lives associated with your soul that are different timelines, like we would say past lives. Some of these, the need is to develop a public self, but some of these, everything says to you, all people, all institutions, all traditions will say to you, you can't express yourself here. So that's why that's so I mean, I'm like touched that that's what you do. I'm like happy to hear that that's what you do. Have done and do. And because in some, like living, having Pluto in the 10th means that you're dealing with social expectations as well.
At the time, I went back to school as an adult and got my degree in fine arts. And at the time when I started creating the art, really creating art, I thought that my intention was to make statements, social political statements. But since then, I realized that they were statements about my inner being. What I thought was an environmental statement was also about was about my internal landscape. Like I did one charcoal drawing of a polluted river and signs of industry in the background, and a woman sitting in this dry riverbed looking very sad, and I thought that it was just an environmental statement. It was also about my internal landscape, my internal environment.
Yes.
And talking, you mentioned the public.
Yes.
I've just recently volunteered to teach art classes to the women who are in the domestic violence.
Okay.
Right.
So, ultimately, one of the byproducts of this journey for you is to become a symbol of working with emotion, become a public symbol, and that's just like I'm not saying that. You have now crossed the finish line and you don't have to incarnate anymore. But, like, that indicates the progression of karmic healing. So, so I do want to say, I want to ask you a couple questions about stuff that was going on earlier in your life relative to being an artist or, you know, you being available to be seen. Because this is a real progression. That, you know, you're kind of at the end of a progression. And the chapters of that story over the course of your life about who you are in public and how you understand your feelings and either share or show them, that indicates kind of a compression of a bunch of different lives that you will have processed and gone through. So, you know, like when you were young, was there an expectation, because Pluto in Cancer is also about becoming empowered through family connection. So was there an expectation of what you might do when you grew up?
Within myself.
Within your family. I want to start there.
It was only within myself.
Ah, there was no expectation. Okay.
I grew up on an apple orchard, not very far from here.
Oh.
And I just literally lived out in what I call my hot roots.
Okay.
Starting when I was 7 years old. And I developed a deep, deep connection to it.
Okay.
At that time, and at that time, I started wondering what life was all about. I wanted to start wondering about God. All these questions. Starting at that age. And then I was always drawing, and I wrote poems and stories. And I just had this. And I would look out over the wheat fields and the cascade to the west, and I would wonder what was over those mountains, and I thought, someday I want to go there and find out. So I have this spirit of adventure.
Yeah.
There. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where I was going with this now.
Well, what you expected of yourself?
Internal, because in my family, no one talked about anything real ever.
Okay.
Not only were you not supposed to talk about anything real, you weren't even supposed to feel anything.
Got it. Okay. Good. So, okay.
So I lived in my imagination.
Yeah. So we'll go there too, because this chart speaks that.
Yeah.
It just speaks that in several different ways. I kind of want to do all of it at once, but we're going to go in order. I just want to jump around because I want you to see. Yeah, I want you to see what's happening. But okay. So that's the basic Pluto idea, is that the soul's intention to develop some kind of public self, but maybe in some lives it not happening, or it not being authentic in some lives, that kind of thing. And so to go through this progression of going back to school to do the thing you want, and okay. So you're kind of there in a good way. Okay. So I want to talk about the squares to Pluto. The two squares. It's not a T-square because the orbs are a little different. But we have retrograde Uranus and Taurus in the 8th. And, you know, lots of people your age are going to have this square, but it doesn't make it impersonal because this is squaring the soul's journey. And so Taurus in the 8th, you know, this energy is about, I mean, kind of the family not really talking about anything deep. That's part of it. It's part of it, because Taurus in the 8th might want to shy away from complexity, because 8th house matters, that kind of place where we merge or we get entangled. The Taurus, there's a conservatism, maybe a resistance or stubbornness to that. And but the Uranus squaring the Pluto, your soul's mission can be derailed by sudden change from within relationships. So in some lives, commitments you make in relationship have kept you from developing a public self. Yes. And so in this life, you would have had relationships that might have threatened to do that, and they probably went away, and then you kind of felt open. Is that, or is there something about relationships ending in order for you to open up to do what you want?
Oh, yes.
Yes, that's, yeah. Yeah. And so, sorry. Yeah. And when you married, when you made that commitment, you weren't totally sure who you were or how it would come out, but it's also, you literally were a different person, and you were a Taurian person when you made that commitment. Like, you're, because the kind of conservative, this is what it looks like, and that's really what it is on the surface, and it's like not it's static.
I tried to fit in.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's not going to work. It's not, because, I mean, then we're going to talk about the other squares to Pluto are Ceres. Wait, that's not true. Well, it's 10 degrees for Mercury. I usually don't use that with Pluto, but we'll mention it. No, we don't. I don't want to do that. 10 degrees to Pluto. I don't want to do that. Sorry. It shows up on this chart, which I don't understand why they do 10 degree squares, but they do. Okay. Let me just look here. Yeah, thank you. Squaring the sun. Which is 8. Okay. So, sun and Scorpio in the 2nd. Actually, you and I have the same angles and some of the same things here. That's interesting. Because my north node's in 4th in the Capricorn as well. Like, we have the same nodal structure and the same angles, you know, the same ascendant and midheaven. So I'm kind of seeing some of my own stuff in your story a little bit. who I really am. I had to take time to find the fourth house north node. Sorry, we'll get there. But the square to Pluto. So this soul's mission of doing something well and being recognized for it, and ultimately becoming a symbol of offering something of the heart, right? The Cancerian stuff. That's squared by a Scorpio sun in the 2nd. And there's an element of, you know, like personality-wise, you have a Scorpio sun in the 2nd. That's one thing. But being squared by that karmically is a separate story. It's like your biggest tool right now to have the impulse to get grounded and get stable and to be self-reliant. But in the karmic past, you've been pressured and knocked over by people like that. Big personalities who are very confident, much more confident than you think you might be, pushing you. Of course, the evolutionary intention is to learn about being sun, which is shining, being bold and big, through being pressed by it, through friction by it. And so, does that make sense?
No, not really.
Okay.
You don't really relate to that.
Just say it again?
Yeah, say it again.
Okay. Well, so there's an evolutionary intention with to learn about sun, boldness, creativity, shining, through being pressured by people who are very stubborn and they're set in their ways who represent that energy. So it's like really big personalities who might not be able to see you and they try to tell you who you are. And they might not see you, though.
Well, I felt invisible and non-existent for a large part of my life. Because my feelings were never validated.
Exactly. Exactly.
And
yeah.
I learned, well, I finally came to terms within the last 2 years after I was sexually abused by my father.
Okay.
When I was very young.
Okay. Right. Right. So, we're very, very young. Yeah. Right, right.
Not understanding why, but having a terrible struggle.
Yeah. So these other people bring a big, intense Scorpio energy that brings friction to you. Like abuse is one of the ways that squares can manifest.
Okay.
Because it's like coming at you from the side and perhaps hurting you. And it can also be just a surprise or a differing opinion that challenges you. But lots of times when we're not conscious, like remember, for millions of years we've been creating through ignorance. You know, that is one of the ways that that can manifest. And so, you know, layers of karma for that. Digging? I was trying to say unraveling and digging at the same time. Because I actually do a lot of work where that I call unraveling karma. And so talking about emotional archaeology is just kind of the extra steps before we unravel it. So that's why I keep saying that. Diggling karma. You know, digging through these layers is about why those intense people have come into your life, like the meanings that parts of you might have assigned. So when you can, and perhaps you're there, but when you get to the point where you can say, I drew these strong personalities that brought friction to me because I'm learning about how to become that kind of person and I need pressure. Basically, if they push on you, eventually you realize my feelings need to be validated, and then you do it yourself. So they're the teachers for you that are pushing you in uncomfortable ways. So when you get to that place, then you change the file label on why anything happened in all those various relationships. You see that. That's the digging through the layers for that with you. Because you said it. My feelings were never validated. Right. Because your soul said, I need to figure out how to do that. Myself.
I didn't have feelings.
Right.
As to what any of my feelings were.
Right.
I went to the first time I went to a therapist, and he would ask me a question. In my mind, all I was thinking was, what's the right answer? What is he expecting me to say? Well, I didn't have a clue.
Yes.
I couldn't tell him what I felt about anything.
Yes. Right. Now, yes, the evolution, you know, her evolutionary path has taken her to express, but you have to find out what you feel first. So we're going to get there with the nodes too, because this is that's a big deal too. So the square to the sun is that pressure that then eventually you can learn to be a solar person. This is what I value. This is what's important to me. Here's my statement, and here's how I validate. Exactly, right?
Yeah.
Is I validate my feelings. That's right. Good. Okay. Good. Okay. So right. Okay, so that's the Pluto component. Now I move on to the second step of the south node of the moon, and we have an echo because the south node of the moon is in Cancer in the 10th house. So, you know, you don't quite know what your at that point in life earlier, didn't know what your feelings were, and you come from people who didn't talk about feelings. It's like the emotional component in your family system has to do with what's happening in the world. It's not who we are, what we're feeling, what you need right now, child, right? So that's the north node and the fourth that we'll get to in a minute. But this, there can be an impersonal involvement with feelings with the Cancer south node in the 10th. It could be a hyper elevated relationship with feelings, or it could be more dampened or suppressed or left out. But it's coincidental. Yeah, there could be like a disconnect from emotions or a real heightened experience of emotions in the family system. Like in my family, with Cancer South Node, heightened experience of emotions. But in yours, it's like dampened. And that's just different ways of learning about cancer, about Cancerian energy. So I think there must be squares. Yeah, the squares to the nodes. One of them, one set, is the Mercury series in Libra in the first. Series is about nurturing. And series is about asking oneself what one needs and asking others, right? But it's about taking care of self and other. Mercury is about communication as well as conscious awareness, like actually perceiving. So, you know, and I'm leaving out the sign and the house for a second, but just those two symbols square the nodes. There's an unresolved issue about what people need, like what you need, what parents, you know, what they need. And there's a way of observing practical things. Well, she needs a new pair of shoes, and that's a valid need, right? Like school starting, the shoes have holes. Let's get her a new pair. There's a valid need, but that's not the same as, wow, she really needs to tell us what she wants to do tomorrow. She really needs to tell us what her perfect birthday party would be like. She might need to communicate that. We just don't get that. You know, in this system. So left out in a lot of your family karma, you know, the group karma, left out is an awareness of how to directly, first house, address our needs individually and together. That's the Libra component. So it's like not even being sure of what we really need. And I ask you, you know, the therapist asks you what you feel, and you're not quite sure what the right answer is. Well, this says in your running through your physical body is an awareness of a need. So if you got in the practice of scanning your body, you would find questions and requests at different places because you're carrying the energy of Mercury series communicating need in your physical body. Because stuff in the first house we carry unconsciously. But that's part of the thing is we don't always know it till somebody else reflects to us because we just carry it. Like my Mars Uranus, I move really fast. Talk really fast. I need people to say, could you slow down a little bit once in a while? I don't know. I'm not aware of it. So for her, that like, that's the unresolved issue that, you know, you needed to learn more about that and to look at how your family treated those things and to say, actually, I need this instead. So that's kind of that square to the nose and how that works. There are other squares to the nodes. Specifically, the asteroid Persephone and the asteroid Juno in Aries in the seventh. They're in a Y. They're 9 degrees, so maybe they're not conjunct, but they are each square of the nodes, and they're both retrograde. Let's start with Juno. Unresolved issue about the right reasons and ways to make commitments in a relationship. So it looks like a karmic setup to perhaps need to get married to somebody you shouldn't be married to figure out the importance when you make a commitment and how it affects your life, which is what you said earlier about that relationship. Yeah. Have you been married more than once, or is that the time? Is that the one time?
The second time, for a very short period.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
I've been in a couple of other long-term relationships.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah. All disastrous.
So why you choose them? Well, I mean, this is actually in tension with what you need for yourself. So there's that dialogue within you. So, you know, why you choose relationships is karmically there are some missteps. Probably in some other life, you make a commitment because your parents think it makes a good match. Whether you're a boy or a girl, you know what I mean? You can advance the family's position. Cancer, 10th house, south node. You can advance the family's position by making a certain choice, and then you spend 30 years... You give this person children or you have children with this person and you don't love him or her. And it's just like, so there's like a thing about needing to retool how you commit to things and what's really important. Okay, so that's that square. The Persephone in the seventh, it kind of echoes it because it's also retrograde, but Persephone is where we need to be abducted and you need to be abducted into situations that offer fairness in which you can create harmony and balance and be happy within partnership. But what that, but the square to the nodes is an unresolved issue about where relationship takes you. So now, you know, 20th century, 21st century adult woman can abduct herself in and out of relationships that do and don't work. So that's the evolution of that, is for you to make choices this life that you probably didn't have an opportunity to make in other lives. You know, and I'm just kind of reading a thing too, like intuitively that there's some life, and it's a knot, but there's some life where they are telling you, you know, you're like a 14-year-old girl and you're being promised to this guy down the street. And for in 3 years, you'll marry. And you're like, no. Like, you refuse to be abducted into what doesn't work. And then the tension that that causes, because this 10th house Cancer South node is about reputation. You're going to say something?
Yes, I'm going to say. I've been in a new relationship for just the last 7 months, and I'm consciously approaching it from a totally different place than I've ever had. And it's kind of an adventure.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. So that's the evolution.
I know what appropriate limits and boundaries are now.
Yeah. So that's karmic healing. That's karmic healing for you. Karmic healing for you.
Oh, yeah.
To get to the place where you,
it feels
something feels new.
Yes. Yes, and it feels healthy.
Feels healthy.
Wherever the relationship goes, I'm not going there. I'm just living it. I'm just letting it happen, letting it unfold.
Right. Good.
Not trying to control it. Just allowing it to be.
Good.
It's
own
life,
good.
That is.
Good.
And it's I know that it's a learning process for me.
Yeah. Good. Good.
Except Jupiter going through 8th right now.
Yep. 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 Okay. So those are the squares to the nodes. The only conjunction to the north node is the IC, which is the beginning of the fourth house. I am going to talk about that, and it will make us talk about step number four, the north node, a little bit, but out of order. But, you know, the north node conjunct to the IC, it's in the fourth, but conjunct the IC, there's an extra emphasis on the need to know inner self, inner truth, what's really going on. What do you need? How do you need to do this? What is the reality, Capricorn, about what makes people connected? And it's kind of an evaluation of bloodline connection versus open heart friend connection, you know, in comparison with people you create as your family, you know what I mean, over time. And then how to weigh those things. But there's like that getting realistic about what's really happening on the inside. So like you're with that psychotherapist being confronted with, well, what am I supposed to say? That's 10th house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fourth house answer is, oh, I have to feel what's really happening and then I can eventually tell you. But like that in touch with that foundation. When I talk about, you know, the parts getting shoved into the basement, that's kind of a different basement conversation in the mansion of your psyche. But there is this thing about the fourth house being our emotional foundation. And sometimes that is kind of our the basement of a house, where it's like that's where our roots are. So really getting conscious of what you need and who you are and what's really happening is so important there. Okay. So step number, yes.
I was wondering if I'm asking a question about asking a question, I realize this. Because I had it, my question left over from yesterday was sort of in relation to the nodes on the angles, but it's not about the specific chart. Maybe I'll wait until we're done with
cool.
And then ask it before you go into the next.
Okay, thanks. Okay. So step number three, the south node ruler. South node's Cancer, so we look for the moon, and that's with Jupiter in Scorpio in the second house. So within this context of, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but like not being focused inward, right? In this context of family doesn't talk about emotions, people don't really know what they feel. In that context, you live in the house of trying to figure out self-worth and self-esteem. You live through the lens of digging for the truth, but you're in a context where people don't know what they feel. But you need to figure out what you feel. But it's like they just can't, they can't teach you that. And those are some of that inherent tension between South Node ruler and the South Node. And but it's with Jupiter. So you're going to have some, the capacity to develop very buoyant optimism and self-esteem. Like you have the capacity to develop that. But you also have the capacity to get derailed from that because of intense emotions or pessimism, right? Because Jupiter and Scorpio, which actually your Jupiters are conjunct, by the way. Yeah. Your Candace, your Jupiter is on Candace's Jupiter because it's a 12-year cycle and you're 12 years different in age. But anyway, so I was just going to say, you know about like how the power of optimism versus pessimism and how it's almost like within you, it's almost like a superhero power that you can, if you can get to the place of positive, you can change your life around you, but it's easy to get stuck in the pitfall, you know. Yeah, so so that's kind of how you show up. You show up in that context where people aren't really in touch with stuff. You're like deeply in touch with stuff, but you don't have training. You don't have exposure to how it maybe could or should be done. What's the right answer here? You know, that kind of thing. And that South Node ruler is squared by Saturn and Vesta in Pisces in the fifth. And that brings the energy of friction from authority figures who take up a lot of space and who might not be really clear about what's true or what's really going on. So it's kind of like there can be a rule without foundation that then is pressed upon you. Like, well, why? And then you live in Scorpio down here, South Node ruler. Well, why is that rule? And nobody can answer you. And they never got an answer when they asked, so they gave up. But you can't give up. You know? Yeah. Okay.
Pitbull. Good one.
Right? Yeah, developing into it.
I've been digging all my life.
A whatagist?
I'm an archaeologist.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Surrounded by people who don't know where the shovels are and don't understand what could possibly be under the surface.
Everyone asks themselves all of these questions.
Right. Right. Right, they don't. They don't. Well, and that's the thing with living a living Scorpio energy, and you also have Sun, Moon, and Scorpio, which we'll get to, you know, a little bit. But that's the thing when we live the Scorpio energy karmically is like we're looking below the surface, but we're surrounded by people who probably can't or don't want to. That's the like. So I think I take this example from somebody else, but like a little kid at a dinner table, who says something at the family gathering about the uncle who's an alcoholic. Like, why is Uncle Jimmy constantly drunk? And everyone's like, you know, that kind of like taboo thing. Like, don't tell, we don't talk about that. And it's kind of like the realities of how things are really working. And, can, you know, you keep saying, can we just talk about this? And that's a real like wanting to bring Pluto to the surface to be real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see, that's a South Node.
Also, Moon, Jupiter, Trine, Pluto, and Moon, reception.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of underscores that need to have that kind of conversation out in the open. And so then we go to the fourth step, which is the north, and we talked about that some. And, you know, there's a real need to just know exactly who you are, what's going on, and what you need, but then to do something about it, to do something about it. And, you know, coming from a Cancer South Node, if there are any, and you don't have them now, but I'm wondering about in the past, if there are any prejudices against being Capricorn, which is like structured, realistic, being willing to sacrifice things to achieve greater goals, and also long-term plan, like there might, I don't know if you have any beliefs in play about what it's like to be realistic and mature. I mean, I don't know if you have anything, if this resonates with you at all. But like the Capricorn kind of prejudices that a Cancer South Node can have. I don't know, does that make any sense? I don't even know if I'm making sense right now.
Could you say that?
Yeah, sure. Sometimes there are prejudices about those kinds of people regarding our North Node symbolism. So it's like, A, South Node ruler for you is squared by Saturn, which rules the North Node, which is what your family could never teach you. So I say getting realistic about the inner quest, getting realistic about seeing what it is you actually need, what makes you tick, what you have to do. But if I'm wondering if you had to kind of grow into being willing to do that, even though nobody could show you how to do that. Did you have to become willing?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, to look inside and be realistic.
I made a deep commitment to myself that the primary was divorce.
Okay.
And so consciously, at that time, started this spiritual journey and spiritual path. Like I said, consciously.
Right.
And I've done a lot of work for over the last 2 years with a spiritual mentor and healer in Oregon.
Yeah.
And I've just come so far. And I've healed from the sexual abuse. I love my father.
Mm-hmm.
All I choose to look at now were the wonderful things about him.
Right.
I've forgiven my ex-husband, finally, after a long, long time.
Mm.
I have a relationship with my younger son that has been very strained for many years. Because I started sending all of them love.
Yeah.
Nothing but love. I've learned so much about energy and everything is energy. And I'm so aware of what energy I'm projecting and what energy I'm feeling from other people. And sometimes it gets to be a little difficult. Some of the energy I feel coming from other people. Learning how to deal with that is a bit of a challenge right now.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I feel weight. I can be in a situation where I feel way too much energy.
Yeah.
I don't like going to Costco. I hate it. It's too big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't like being in large crowds of people. It's just too much energy.
Yes.
And so energy, my own energy,
yes,
is what I'm really, I guess, focused on right now. And how I'm with that energy in relationships.
Yeah.
I find myself like I'm going to a book study group on Wednesdays, and we're studying a book called Soul Evolution, which is channeled by a group called the Simians.
Okay.
I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
No.
Oh, it's the most wonderful book. A man appeared in our study group. He was coming down from Ellensburg, and he came in one day with a copy of this book, and he was wondering if we would both be interested in studying it as a group. Well, of course, me, I love to read, and I volunteered to take it home and preview it,
right? Right.
Well, I just started going through it, and I, oh, yeah, this is my kind of book. So I took it back to the group and really highly recommended it. So, oh my gosh, it is wonderful. It's all about energy.
Mm.
The fact that we are all beings of energy.
Yeah, yeah.
And the whole thing is just there. And for me, anyway.
Yeah.
For me. And so now this man, he'll come for a while to the study group and then he disappears. And then he might come again.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure that he came just to bring us this book. I know he did. And there are things in there that I can completely understand somewhere in here. I can't put them into words.
Yes.
Always.
Yes.
They're just the knowingness I had.
Yes.
And I had some very powerful psychic experiences when I was studying art.
Yeah.
Related to, I was going to a class called Anthropology of Religion. And between that and my art classes, I was drawing and painting things before I saw a video, for instance, in the Anthropology of Religion class. And the first time I stepped off the plane on the Big Island of Hawaii, I knew I had been there before.
Yeah.
I know I was a Native American before.
Uh-huh. Right.
And sometimes this knowingness gets to be a bit too much.
I know. I have that too. I know. I relate to that. Yeah. I do relate to that, yeah.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah.
So, and I find myself in the study group recently, someone might say something, and I just come out, I don't know I'm going to say these things, but I just open my mouth and I start saying. And recently I read this book, when I was living in Port Townsend, I went to a week-long lecture series taught by a man from Antioch College in Seattle, and he was a Jungian psychologist, and he specialized in interpreting dreams. Anyway, he had lived in Hiroshima, for 10 years at least it was, and he worked with the survivors of Hiroshima and interpreted dreams for them and worked with them from a psychological standpoint. And he told about being in a hospital visiting some of the survivors, and there was this medicine man from Africa who was there at the same time. And when they left that hospital, this African medicine man said to this man, his name is Randy Morris, and he said to him, "I must take responsibility for this." And then he repeated it again, and he said, "I must take responsibility for this." And I know what he meant. I know that we are all responsible for everything.
Right.
Everything, because we put that energy out there. And boy, it's time to look at what we're doing with our energy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
And so I start spouting things like this now.
Yeah.
In the study group, and then I think afterwards, oh my gosh, what did I say? And one day, oh my gosh, it was after we assassinated Osama bin Laden, and there were all these people showing them on TV celebrating this.
Right.
And I just thought, no, this is so wrong.
Right.
Right. Right. We're not supposed to talk politics, right?
That's right. Okay.
Well, I said, I can't stand to watch the celebration on the TV. Where's our humanity? Who are we? What are these people about? And so this one man said, "Well, don't you believe in an eye for an eye? Well, if you people here don't believe in the Bible, I guess I don't belong here."
Right. Well, see, now this, I mean, you said some things that, like, bring in different parts of the chart, like Venus, Neptune, and the 12th, like, psychic art stuff. Like, you know, but for you to speak up about what's important to you, like the Mercury in the first is important. But, like, that all reflects a grounded foundation in that fourth house. Realistically, what makes me tick? Who am I? What do I want to say? So it's like, that I'm just pointing out that reflects that north node a lot, though it brings in other parts of you.
Yeah. What I'm going to say? It just comes out.
Great.
It shocks me sometimes.
Well, and that's part of the 10th house south node. We're trained to be respectable or at least appropriate. But you got to say something. You got to say it. And that's the 4th house north node. You got to bring it. You got to bring it out. So, and because of the 10th house south node, you have the possibility to get attention in public because you have karma conditioning that way. So as long as you speak from your heart, you'll feel fine. Yeah. Yeah. So good. So thanks for all of that. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm glad you came to this. I'm really glad that you're here.
Me too.
Yeah, good. Okay. So, let's take a short breath, like a few seconds, and then we'll move on to our friend Michael. Oh yeah, you have your question. That's great.
Okay, one thing when south node is what we're comfortable with, north node is what we're not so comfortable with, and you know, working together. And so when it's conjunct the IC and the DC,
yeah,
the north node is, that's one thing. But with the ascendant and the midheaven being like, if you have something there or whatever the sign is on those points, usually it's like that's how we look to people, you know.
Right.
So it's like, for instance, she'll look very Cancer and Libra.
Right.
Cancer and midheaven, Libra and ascendant. When the north node is conjunct one of those points, and it's something, you know, something that is uncomfortable for us to go to, how does that affect, you know, how other people see us or our comfort level being embodying that sign?
That's really what we're talking about, their comfort level being embodied by it. Because the 10th, the beginning of the 10th, the MC, midheaven, is just a visible point. It's just who we appear to be. But the north node there has to do with like either consciously or directly experiencing what that's like and being comfortable with it. In the terms of the north node, like let's say the north node being conjunct the midheaven, what you have is the family system could not train you how to live in the world.
Wow.
So you show up, she might show, let's say the nodes were reversed and her north node were on that Cancer midheaven. That means that the family system is teaching her how to be Capricorn fourth house inner.
Yeah.
They're not teaching her, well, if you want to be a geologist, you have to go to college to get this certain kind of degree and get this training and do this postdoc. And they can't tell her that because they can't tell her how to plan a vision, a long-term thing. So, but her, what her people could teach her is if she said, I really want to have this profession, somebody in her family would probably be happy to advise her on practical ways to make that happen eventually. I mean, there might have been things about what women are supposed to do, might not have been, but like, you know, but they would understand more about things that work in the world. They didn't know how to talk about the emotions. But if it were reversed, they might be all about emotions and really not understand how to be in the world. They might have jobs they hate. They might have terrible relationships with bosses because they're not sure how to get what they want and need. It's like being in public, but it's also dealing with the fact of people seeing you. That's another part of it. So a north node on a midheaven would also be that you have to be comfortable being seen. Yeah.
What about the ascendant?
The ascendant. Which one do you want to do? North node on the ascendant?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're seen as something. Let's say that it's a Libra ascendant. You know, people will automatically assume that, see, you know, make assumptions about your mask and see that kind of Libra. Because you will show, you can't help but show up as whatever the ascendant sign is, right? You just naturally carry the energy. But if the north node's there, we bring in self-assertion, like actively working the ascendant. Self-assertion, choosing to show up, being seen, you know, making a decision about how you're going to act socially when you don't know people. It might be a default Libra kind of energy without any choice or comfort about it. And think about healthy ascendants, healthy first house. It's, I'm just going to show up and interact with you and look you in the eye and just like, here we are. So the north node, they're not trained to do that. But people defer to others. Seventh house, south node. The importance, ascendant, descendant axis or first house, seventh house axis, the axis of self-definition. First house, I am. Seventh house, well, I'm taking cues about how I am because I can see who you are and how I relate to you. Oh my God, how laborious and complicated. So if you have a south node in the seventh, there could be a tendency to defer to others or to expect others to defer to you. The first house north node or the ascendant on the north node would be showing up without apology, without, like you might see everybody else, but you might not try to adapt. You might not be a chameleon. You might not have any inkling that people should do that. Yeah, it's just like showing up. Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. So let's go into Michael's chart. Okay. And we start with the first step. We start with Pluto and the soul level intentions and the empowerment journey. So this is retrograde in Leo in the seventh, and it's close to the edge of the eighth, but I'm going to read it in the seventh right for now. And so the soul level intention is to become empowered within relationship, seventh house. Become empowered through one-on-one interactions. And in a Leo way, which means become empowered, one way of saying it is, by actually showing up as who he really is within relationship. But also there's going to be some layering of perhaps some debris about not doing that and then hoping other people see who you really are, but they might not. Because you're learning about the responsibility within relationship to say, this is who I am. You and I could tell. Let's just let that sit in for a sec.
Yeah.
You show up just as who you are. If I don't see you, let's say I make assumptions about who you are, and I don't really connect with you, and I'm looking you in the eye, and I'm listening to the words you use, but we're not energetically on the same page, it's going to be hard for you, because you need to recognize others' individuality within your relationships, but you need to receive that too. But what we don't always get about seventh house and Venus and relationships in Libra is that we are responsible for showing who we are. We're hoping the other person sees us, but we're responsible for showing up. So there's a key for you. There's a key for you. There is an element of joy, because we're talking about Leo in relationships, fun, needing relationships to have a certain simplicity so that they're enjoyable everything doesn't have to be complex all the time. But he's also wired at the soul level to learn about what it takes to make relationships work, so things do get complicated sometimes. The retrograde is about, inventing his own relationship wheel. Everybody around him has ideas on how to do this relationship and that relationship, what it takes, what it means, but he's got to become empowered via his own means, through your own way of doing it. What a Pluto in the seventh that's retrograde can experience, and you can tell us, you know, yes or no if this resonates, but the having of relationships that end up being like in the earlier part of life, say first relationships, you know, earlier intense relationships or earlier partner type relationships, whether it's a marriage or not, but having relationships where they're intense proving grounds. Yeah, like they're basically, yes, because you're learning intensely about relationship dynamics, but you have to have some kind of stable, committed thing in which to do it. So a first serious relationship might have just been an incredible amount of work until you learned about who you are within relationship. But then other relationships later, when you make certain decisions, they can get easier because you're doing it differently. But you have to have an incubator first. Yeah. Yeah. So, you see.
I challenge my trust.
Exactly.
In my decision.
Exactly.
In another person. If I was going to sink my heart into that person.
Right. Right.
And then suddenly I have new things coming after that. I wonder if I should be guarded for this part.
Right.
And then I have to develop connections.
Great. Great. Yeah. And so that's like, I said proving ground. I mean like, you know, like a test, a testing ground. Like, this is our laboratory to learn this. This is our laboratory.
Practice.
Practicum. First, yeah, the practice. Practice. Exactly. Right. But at the time, you're in there. But now you can see it was kind of a practice. Yeah, now it's a practice. You can see the context. Yeah. So in the context of the soul's journey, you know, you need these incubators to figure out how you're going to choose to behave in relationship. That's what the whole point is. Mm-hmm. How am I going to choose to behave? In two threads. A, how I'm going to show up, and B, how I'm going to receive the other. And how am I going to be able to learn about what I need and how to ask for it and how to talk about that and also honor what the other person needs. Because individuality within relationship, Leo 7th, Leo in the 7th house, is the name of the game. You know, this, you know, 7th house stuff becomes a unit. You know, people join together and head off in one direction, perhaps heading off into the sunset or skipping hands together, you know, holding hands, skipping down the road. But there's this directionality together. But the Leo thing says, really, really important for your individuality to be intact and to be healthy. And the other person's as well, alongside the two individuals choosing to skip down the sidewalk together instead of losing individuality. Okay, good. Okay. Oh, retrograde, this idea, how his parents did it, how his grandparents did it, how his cousins and siblings did it, doesn't matter. He's got to forge your own way through this. Even if you get tons of great advice, it might not work for you to put in a play. Okay. So that's the basic soul level intention. There's a square to Moon Ceres, another Moon in Scorpio, like Anne. And also the opposition to Mars, Persephone, and Aquarius. So let's start with the opposition. And the Mars, Persephone, and Aquarius are in the second house. So when somebody's Pluto is opposed by something in the second, and we talked about this with Glenna's Pisces Sun opposing her Pluto, you're opposed by somebody who is not movable. You're opposed by somebody who is standing his or her ground. Mars says that there is an aggressive energy to this. And Aquarius, you know, can indicate a difference, uniqueness, but also can be harsh. So there's an element here of criticism or being blocked that he has received in his relationships. He probably has had intimate long-term relationship with somebody who really challenges him, but there's a lot of love. But it can also be from outside having difficult opposing your relationships. Does that make sense to you? Maybe, that makes sense to you. Yeah. And the Persephone's there. So basically,
what was your character?
Abduction. Abduction.
Is that this abduction notion? Is that some kind of force? Is it kind of a force position?
Or it can be.
Position?
Yes. Somebody else bringing you assertive energy that changes everything. That zaps.
Could be good.
It could be great.
For me, yes, it could be a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. As you seek, this is the phrase I get. As you seek to what the best way to get on the same page with somebody you're involved with, even a friend, right? Something that can change everything is this very it's a forceful change that confronts what you perceive you need. So if somebody brings an energy to you, it's like the unshakable, the unmovable object, and you're trying to get on the same page, and that person's unwillingness to adapt teaches you about you. Person will not get on the same page with you. It looks like struggle and conflict, even if there's love. And then it shows you your need. So you manifest these people because you need to learn about Mars and Persephone through opposition. Opposition. Two people stand, it could be two gunfighters ready to shoot each other down if they feel threatened. It can also be, I'm looking straight at you, you're looking straight at me. I can see you in a way you cannot see yourself. You see me in a way I cannot see myself. So am I willing to learn from you? Or do I feel threatened? So it can be that or the gunslinger thing of like, on guard, ready to, yeah. So,
there's that love element, then I'd be more willing to stay with that.
Exactly.
Person.
Exactly.
Energy.
Exactly.
It's attractive.
That's right.
How did you get so?
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Exactly. And then it shows you. Exactly. And then it shows you how you can learn. So anyway, this opposition, you know, this also says that there, you know, it's possible because we're talking about Mars square Pluto with these ladies. Mars opposite Pluto can also indicate violence coming to you, but perhaps you haven't experienced. I don't know if you've experienced that, but it's one of the things that.
Like violence coming to me from that.
Like people threatening you, people coming at you. Maybe you haven't experienced that.
Not feeling overpowered.
Yeah, overpowered.
Feeling overpowered.
I know people in my life that are like that, but I don't.
It's not his karma.
It's not his
karma. Perfect. I just want to point it out in case it was juicy. Yeah?
But he did. Wasn't you a teacher at a college
for fencing? Yeah.
For fencing.
Thank you. That's
you doing the energy. Yeah. Okay, so maybe he doesn't. Maybe he doesn't have karma of being overpowered by Mars, and that's awesome. We're happy to hear that you don't have that. But yeah, I just wanted to bring it up just in case. I didn't know. Yeah.
Let me think about that.
Yeah. This basically says that Mars stuff, aggression, assertion, martial arts, war, violence, but like rescue, defense, like that assertive energy stands opposite you in all these lives, and different experiences give you the opportunity to learn about taking action even though you're confronted. I don't know if I would do it that way, but that's very successful. So let me figure out how to do that. That kind of...
Having that opposition, sometimes we say, I don't have the confidence to go do that.
Right.
Somebody said, wait, you've already done that. We know you can do that. I think you mentioned maybe your Mars can activate, get in there.
That's right.
And give it a try. But some part
right.
of you say, I don't think I can do that.
Exactly.
That
exactly.
Like
so needing
says,
to...
Yes, here I am, I can go do that.
That's right, and needing to own the Mars.
What about this abduction idea, that if Mars is where you're asserting your will, and Persephone's right there with it...
He needs to be abducted into asserting his will.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or
Which is
help.
A way of standing up for yourself,
not
having
help.
Boundaries...
Abducted.
Yeah, not help, but
yeah.
You know, I'd call for help. You call for help.
Right? That's right.
Say, wait a minute, you've already done that. I don't think
so. Other people were reflecting to you things you're not quite sure are true, but probably are,
yeah.
And that's part of the Mars opposite Pluto. Other people are Mars. Other people have the boldness.
Yes.
Other people save kittens from trees.
Yeah.
other people put out fires, you know, and climb ladders and help people, you know. But so for you to own it, because then we're going to talk about your south node, which is in the house of Mars. So we're going to talk about that in a minute. Yeah. So this is a.
Does that help?
Well, it's more layers. It's more layers. It'll be in. I think it'll be revelatory. You know, instructive and. But so anyway, that's the opposition. That's the opposition there. But yeah, he needs to be abducted into original ways of doing Mars and actually help his self-esteem in the second house. But he might not think it's his because it opposes Pluto, opposes the soul's mission. In some lives, you have been blocked by Mars people. That you're not overtly carrying the trauma of war or abuse is great. I'd love to see it. But like you've been blocked by Mars. You might not have developed meaning about it. You might not have developed karma about what it means when somebody blocks you. You might not have done that. And that just...
That affects my confidence.
It does. Exactly.
And some say, you could do that. What's the problem? I don't think I can do that.
Right, they see you as capable and clear and in the moment.
See, well, what's the problem?
Right.
I don't know what it is. It could be just tension.
That's right. In some lives, you could have been told by martial people, you can't do this. You know, this you know, just a thread could be... let me just think about how I want to say this. The kid who doesn't get picked for the sports team enough, for some reason, like maybe they perceive you're not tall enough to play basketball, something like that. Like, and you happen to be,
all of my sports experience in my going to school, I never got picked because I wasn't quite big enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I was, like, trying to figure out how to say it without picking on you. I was trying to figure out a way of, like, because, like, you are kind of short in stature. You are kind of, like, height-wise, right? But I'm kind of feeling, not even from this life, that that's a repeat, but feeling like in other lives, the feeling of not being like everybody else because they don't want you to play with them. And there's, like, this reason. I mean, the first thing I got that I put on the shelf was, I want to join the Army. And then looking at you and saying, You're too nice of a guy. You're kind of a sweet guy. I don't think you can cut it. And you saying, I want to fight for my country. And them saying, I don't think you got what it takes, kid. Call me in 2 years. But you're so deflated that you never call back. Like you show up when you're 16 is what I'm getting at. And they're like, we can't take you quite yet. But I'm not even, you know, but that kind of challenge to your mettle, you know? Yeah. But over time then, if you believe that they might be right, then you'll be like, well, maybe I can't do that because Mars people oppose you. So you haven't experienced it as trauma. You've experienced it as something else. But it's actually nice to see because most people with, a lot of people with this one.
Those are indicators that I know I've experienced. Oh, you might be short for the basketball.
That's right.
And you're too little for the football.
That's right.
So you better go do something else.
Right, exactly. That's a karmic thing. Yeah.
I'm just getting this energy because of the fact that it's Aquarian. Okay, so let's bring in the Aquarian. I'm so different. You're a little bit different now. You're not the typical Mars alpha male. So I feel a little bit alien. Abduction.
Exactly.
The male alienation and abduction of that sense of I am the fencing instructor. You know, when you show up as the fencing instructor, you're like, I'm going to show you this, and oh, you're just going to think it is the coolest thing in the world, and when you're doing it, whoa! Oh my God, I am empowered in my center. I mean, it's like, he totally takes you a different way.
Right?
Mars.
Yet if you wanted, when he was a kid, to be a football player, and he never got, they wouldn't let him do it, then fencing would look like a cheap substitute that never is fulfilling. But he was actually doing it, it's great. But it might look like it's not fulfilling from the outside. And other people... Exactly. So this is a karmic thing for you. So, because this is in the second house. How can you develop self-esteem by owning the Mars you do have?
Yeah. In its individualistic, original, unique way.
So your Mars comes out through the energy work that's physical, yoga, even the music. It comes out through all this, but it's different than like the alpha male kind of model.
And I would say
ahead. Well, exactly. Because is this a model? Just because you didn't get picked for the team doesn't mean you're not masculine in a wonderful way. It just means that in that context, in that particular social context, you don't fit what they think it would look like.
No. But I have females that help me say, the male in you is fine. The female, we really like her.
Right, perfect.
It's a maverick,
it's
actually.
Like that.
Yeah.
So this is a lot about this story because, you know, I'm going to jump around here. We're forgetting the method here because I want to say several things
he's
at
so
once.
Unique.
Well, here we are, right? But like the South Node in the first says that South Node in first in Capricorn, there is nothing more masculine. So you're coming from family system where there is an understanding of what a man is supposed to be like.
Totally. And the only way you could live, the five brothers.
Where are you in the birth order?
First.
You're the first?
Wow. I'm the smallest. So my father said, you're so little, you better learn boxing or something.
Exactly. And did you? Oh God, I love this. Okay, because South Node, first house Capricorn. I mean, I'm surprised that was there a military thing in your family at all? Your dad or your grandfather? Were there and your brothers? Your brothers? Yeah, it's like that's a first house South Node conditioned by war, but like it can just be like the military too. Like the kind of like masculinity in our culture, the way it's been for quite a while. Anyway, the hyper masculine way of doing military. Hyper masculine.
Aries.
And the warrior who has to be abducted into sports to prove that he's got metal. METTLE, right? That he's got like substance. Okay, but the South Node ruler, Saturn, where is it? It's retrograde in Cancer in the seventh. That's what I wanted to get to out of order.
Yeah.
So like in the first house Capricorn thing, devotion to the military, that's in family history. You know, yeah, you are Cancerian. You are trying to be soft and listen, and you're trying to be a good listener, and you're trying to honor other people's needs. And you're so it's like that. So within that, you know, and so that you're the first, I mean, this would be a really juicy story no matter where you were in the birth order, but it's specific that you're, you know, the soul's contracts with all these family members are that you're the firstborn of the children. You're the first of five males in a Capricorn first house family. So then, so in a way, this, yeah, exactly. Leading with softness. Even if they don't get it. Are all your brothers are younger than you, so are they all surviving? Or they're all alive? Yeah, right, exactly. Versions of strength. This is a family that's shaped deeply by patriarchal philosophy. And so he, at the soul level, has agreed to be a teacher for them for being an anti-patriarchal male. He has a Mars. He uses it. He's used it his entire life. But it's not what they might expect. Now, if you ask them, you're not quite Mars. You're not quite... So anyway, this is where we see... You know, and like if I sat down with him as a client, this is what I'd see right away. And I would say... I would ask my question in my head, does he have a problem being masculine? And I've interacted with him, no. He just does it in a Cancerian way. So it's like, you know, and I would see that South Node ruler on the 7th.
That's history for my own being, though, too. The female in me.
That's right.
Always been so strong.
That's right.
You know, and I'm not attracted to boys or something like that.
Right.
I still have a very different kind of take on being.
So your soul is saying, I'm going to be, even if nobody gets it, and even if I don't really understand what's happening, I'm going to hold space for the people in this family system to have a model of masculinity that isn't about only guts and proving the self, you know? And because a lot of men who are shorter in stature, smaller in size, feel like they have to compensate. Like, you were told you needed to learn boxing if you wanted to measure up. But there'd be a lot of guys your size who would go to something like that to prove it. Because to live in this culture, you know, as a man who doesn't seem manly, according to social... So it's like a whole family story about the patriarchy. And then...
I wasn't ever attracted to that.
Right, exactly.
So I didn't feel like I had to get on the team. Or after a while, I just said, God, I really didn't want to do that anyway. Kind of weird,
right?
Kind of reaction to that. My dad just says, "Fuck up, buddy." You know, your four brothers are passing you up.
Yeah,
but I was smart.
Right.
And he liked that because I was smart.
Oh, okay. So he did value something about you. That's good.
I want you to help run the store. Your other brothers can stack everything and do that, but keep the thing running.
Yeah.
I have those kind of jobs.
So you were appreciated, just not for what they might have dreamed about having a boy, kind of thing. Yeah. Okay. Yes.
If I can, was there a pressure on you to, when you mentioned that your brothers were passing you left, so was there always a constant pressure on you to, I mean, how did you go about holding that? Because it feels like you held that.
Well, I see I had a lot of support from my grandmother.
Who was?
That kind of insulated me, completely insulated me to keep me on my own path.
And she was masculine and feminine. She had both. Yes. Right? She could...
That was still a matriarchal French family. Believe it or not.
Okay.
The matriarch was there making the money and bringing things in.
Right.
She ran everything.
Okay, right.
I learned from her. So
great.
If she said I was doing it, I mean, after a while, it didn't matter what anybody else said.
Right.
Really, and that was my star.
Good.
Now, keep me going.
That's great.
Confident in my choices.
Right.
Where do you
right.
see the masculine feminine grandmother?
Any teacher that really supports him has to have both in the same balance that he has, even if a different gender, to be able to recognize that. I mean,
that's why I've never noticed that a female was less than a male in charge of anything ever.
Right.
So I've never had an issue about being more than a female in partnership with children. Or
right.
anything.
Well, The Saturn in the seventh is conjunct Juno, also in Cancer. So there's an emphasis for him on actually seeing who the other is. So he's, you know, it might look in this cultural context like it's noble that he has a egalitarian outlook. But the fact is he's made a point of really seeing who the other is.
He's been working on it.
Many lives making, you know, it's important for him to show up to be fair. And so he's looking. Well, I mean, in any relationship, the seventh house seeing the other. So he doesn't see a woman in terms of patriarchal conditioning. He sees a woman as a human. He sees a man as a human, not as better than or less. So he doesn't see, and he even sees a top dog and underdog as other people. He doesn't see them as underdog and top dog. So like for him, that valuation, because he keeps showing up as committed to being sensitive to the reality of the other. It'll come out in relationships too, but like even just like interacting, like honoring how somebody actually is wired. And so, yeah.
Is that like beyond dualism? The soul knew something about that, about beyond dualism before you even hit the planet?
Let's see. Well, maybe I would offer that it's more probable. I mean, all of our souls know that.
Yeah.
All of our souls know that, but the eruption into space-time where we start to have separate identities and forget that we're divinity, that's where we develop attitudes like you're less than, you're more than. So I don't want to put it on soul, but I want to say that he's just made it his business over many lives to actually see what's in front of him. And like you can't, when you live in the seventh house and you're living through a Cancerian lens, Juno's there. He's committed to this. It's not like it happened. He's committed to this, you know, at the soul level. So, you know, he will actually see what's there. Well, he sees the look in the eyes of his mother if his father treats her as less than. So he sees the other. He sees that he doesn't see, hairstyle and curves and dress. So she's a woman and then cultural assignation of mean valuing. He doesn't do that. He sees her as a person. Right? Yeah. I mean, he sees what's in front of him. He doesn't put over a mask over what he sees. He just sees what's in. So that's a gift to the rest of his family. Even if they didn't get it at the soul level, they're learning by having you as a family member. At the soul level, they're learning from having you. Even if they never got you, I'm glad, you know, to hear that your father did appreciate you, you know, I'm glad to hear that. But like in some context, you know, maybe that wouldn't happen, but they'd still be learning at the soul level from you.
And it's more appreciated now.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, let me just see squares to the nodes. Yes. Yes. Okay. So this would be still in step two, even though I went out of order, but the squares to the nodes, the nodes of the moon and the aspects to it. So I was talking about that Capricorn first house kind of patriarchal, hyper-masculine, that kind of energy that is the kind of family incubator for you. But square the South Node, Venus, Lucifer, and Aries in the third house, and 16, Lilith, Vesta in Libra in the ninth house. Wow. Okay. So this is talking about the family system and the family karma and what they could and couldn't teach him. Venus, Lucifer, and Aries, they square the nodes. Venus has to do with value system as well as relationships. So there are some reasons that relationships are chosen. This actually echoes Anne's Juno and Aries in the seventh square of the nodes. Reasons that relationships are chosen is an issue. So it's like you could sit down and analyze why you perceive your parents got married, why they wanted to be together, and you can see some glistening threads of things that you can learn about your own relationships that would benefit you. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like why, you know, why? And so that's a thread, but it also means that in various lives, you have picked relationships for reasons that don't really serve you. There's another way of looking at that. And so, you know, one way to say this, I was talking about the first serious relationship you would have had would serve as an incubator for you to learn about what you need in relationship because of the Pluto in the seventh. And this fits with that. Pluto in the seventh with Venus square the nodes is an echo of, I really need to learn about this relationship stuff. You know, I really need to figure this out and make some choices that feel like tripping over my shoelaces and then learning from them. Learning from them, yeah. The Lucifer part of it is about picking relationships in which you get to shine and be equally represented. You have some lives where, and in this life you may go cross the line and go back and forth, but in some lives you'll have an extreme because you're trying to figure out the right thing to do. Some lives it'll be an extreme of picking a relationship where you get to be the center of attention, and other lives you defer. You won't shine. And your values aren't really honored because you don't ever show up and tell them what you want and like. So you're kind of exploring what that is. And so again,
two extremes,
vacillating back and forth, sometimes finding more of a middle ground, but not always. And so the ideal is to find the middle ground, and the archaeology part of it is to look at, when I say those two things to you and you think about potential examples from your life history, this life, you know, did you assign meaning to why you made a choice or why something happened the way it did? And the meaning could be changed. Because the meaning is you're learning something. You didn't make a mistake. You didn't overstep your... The reason it happened is not because you did something wrong, for example, if that's what it is, or the other person did something wrong. The reason is you're learning. And you're trying to figure out where on this continuum reasonable is. Give and take, where good give and take is. You know? Mm-hmm. So that's where the archaeology is with that. Yes. Yeah, we're going to break in just a few minutes. Yeah. And then we'll finish his after lunch. So that's the Venus, Lucifer, square of the nodes. The Lilith, Vesta, and Libra in the ninth square of the nodes. This is interesting. Vesta has to do with something we take really seriously. And, you know, Lilith in Libra is gonna have a lot to do with equality within relationship. Equality within relationship. And because the Lilith story, which is in the Living Myth book, there are four chapters on her in there. The Lilith story has to do with figuring out how, or one thing it is about figuring out how to have equality within relationship given this patriarchal training that most people have, that men are supposed to be like this, women are supposed to be like this, and there's not a lot of wiggle room, and if there is, something's wrong. We live in 2011 and we don't think that way, but we've been trained for 6,000 years to think that way. So this conjunction says it's really, really, really important for you to figure out the equality thing, really important to figure out what's fair, but how also to create it. Not just to say, this is unfair and you did this to me, but to say, what's my part in all of this and how am I creating this? How am I creating my reality with relationships? So we got three things. Venus, well, four things actually. Venus square the nodes is one. Lilith Vesta in Libra, sign of Venus, two, square the nodes. That's the second thing. Third thing is a north node, or Pluto in the seventh house, the house of relationships, I need to learn this. And the fourth thing is north node in the seventh house, I need to learn this. There couldn't be more... There couldn't be more, just in case you didn't... Yeah, there couldn't be more indications of needing to learn about healthy relating. There couldn't be more. And if you approach it with that Cancerian seventh house idea of, but I'm listening to you and I'm sensitive to your needs, that's great. And make sure you show up. Make sure you take responsibility for saying, and this is what I need too. Right, right. It's easy for someone in that position to default to what others need. And you just need to make sure that you show up.
Show up, be equal in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very attractive to me if the female has that strong presence.
That's right.
And then I don't really have to do much.
That's right. That's right.
I love the person. Not that I'm lazy, but just that that's a strong force, and I really love that strong force.
Yes.
It helps me be stronger, but I don't have to be I don't have to be equal.
But make sure you're there.
But I got to make sure I show up.
But you bring a different strength. You bring a different style of strength.
And I think
you're still equal.
Yes, and I've met that with two female best friends.
Good,
they were so strong, but I had something to offer that was
pretty
strong too, and I thought, well, I didn't see that as a strength.
Right, exactly.
But it is.
It is.
Yeah,
that kind of thing reminds me of that.
Yeah.
That's great.
Something was, there was some strong thing there.
Good. So we'll come back. We'll come back after lunch just to wrap up. I think just saying a few more things about the north node or left to say. But I think that's thanks for sharing all that. That's.
Yeah.